Yes, guys, what's good? You're tuned into Mango Masala, Pi Radio South Asian show. My name is Gerns. I am here with Halima and Simran.
Hi.
Hey, everyone.
And by the time this goes out, Eid Mubarak, and also happy Vaisakhi as well. Yeah. Everything's happening at once.
Yep.
Oh my God, we had like Easter, Ramadan, Vaisakhi, Eid now, all at once.
How intersectional.
I know.
Love that. Simran, do you celebrate Vaisakhi? Like, is it like a big celebration that you guys do?
Yeah, like when I was a kid, I used to do the Nagar Kirtan every year. And then we used to like...
How do you celebrate? Vaisakhi.
Yeah, the Nagar Kirtan. Like where basically you walk from like one Gurdwara to another. And then like, to be honest, like the way I understood it when I was younger was that you just, I just used to get to like walk around and people used to just hand me snacks and I used to be like... But obviously there's a lot more meaning to it than that. But yeah, no, I think it's like they happen in Southall on this Sunday just gone. And then Vaisakhi's this week. And then you just like get together with family and just like...
More cute and eat like just loads of good food and stuff.
Yeah.
Love that.
Do you wear like nice outfits? Do you get dressed up and stuff?
Honestly, no, because they're very low key. So like, it's not really much of a celebration. It's more of like just a get together. I feel like the way I remember it is like after school, like we were just like... do something nice, but it wouldn't be like a big thing.
Happier times, everyone.
Aww.
Let's focus on the positive before we go into the inevitable negative.
Goodness.
How's your Ramadan been, Halima?
Do you know what, like I don't know what it is, but I feel like it's been good. Obviously it's Ramadan, like I love Ramadan, I love this time of year, like I always try to make the most of it, but I feel like this year, and everyone's saying the same thing, like we've all just been like really tired. I don't know why, like, and I've started like this really bad habit where, obviously iftar is like the sunset meal where we open our break our fast, and I've started this really bad habit of whatever I need to do in the day, I'll just be like, oh, I'll do it after iftar, because I just have no energy during the day. It's so bad, and then iftar comes, and then like you've eaten, you're like you've got the itis, you've got like the food coma. And then you just can't be bothered. And then it's just a vicious cycle of, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it after that. I'll do it tomorrow. And it's just bad. And then today I woke up and I'm sick again.
Like, you guys remember. Common thing, like during Ramadan, like people getting ill, though, because it's obviously changing like routine and just a bit discombobulating.
Not really. I think my immune system is just in the gutter, like. I think my immune system is on like my enemy's payroll or something like that. I get ill every month, guys. It's terrible.
Well, having said that, though, every year at least that we've been doing this, how are you actually taking your vitamins, Halima? No.
Carlos's mum and dad, the inner voice is coming out.
Well, is this because actually every year we have the same conversation? You're like, oh, my mum really wants me to take vitamins, but I'm not doing it, blah, blah, blah.
I was just about to say.
Yeah, exactly. I'm fed up of it. Mom. The listeners are fed up of hearing the same combo over and over again.
Oh, my God. You guys are going to stage like an intervention or something. All right, fine. I'll take my vitamins. I've started taking greens and then I stopped, but I started taking...
Oh, can I please have an unflipping sponsored review of greens? Because I want to buy them because of what they promise and like to basically sort out all my like gastrointestinal issues. But I literally cannot find a single review that is not affiliated or sponsored.
I'm not going to lie. I haven't taken them long enough. I'll take it for like 4 days and I won't take it for like a month, then I'll take it for 4 days. I will say though, when I do take it, one of the things that I really struggle with is regular bowel movements. My metabolism is so bad, so like when I've taken it, it has helped to regulate my metabolism. My sister takes it very regularly, and I still have that same packet that I bought like 3 months ago. I haven't finished.
What?
My sister takes it. My sister actually takes it like as a routine, and she keeps rebuying it. So I'm guessing it must be good.
What brand? Not sponsored, but what brand?
I use the FS ones. My sister uses the My Protein ones. Interesting. But if you have like gastro problems, you know, Shreddy, is that Grace Beverly's brand? Mm. Their one has probiotics in it as well.
So I started drinking kefir, and that is helping. It was helping, then it stopped helping, and now I'm trying to like figure out if it's going to help again. But I'm gonna be more consistent with
it. Try the shreddy one. It has probiotics. Just buy it for like a month and see. Like,
no, it's true, because it's actually not that expensive. So I probably should just buy it. But I literally got to the point where I was like, I was getting frustrated because it promises such good things. But everyone was like, use my link and da da. And I was like, well, I don't know if you're just like saying it then. And you know how TikTok, side point, you know how TikTok has just become like a marketplace just for like throwing out these sellers links, TikTok shop? Like, my For You page is inundated with just like greens, viral tops for £2, an eyebrow, something for your eyebrow, like just
lashes. I've been buying hella lashes. And
mine's rubbish. Exercise equipment.
Oh, really?
Like, what kind of exercise equipment?
Like, so I actually did get one of them. No, because
I've been buying.
I'm scared to give TikTok my card details. Like, I'm not doing
things from TikTok.
No, I'm not giving TikTok my card details, mate. They got everything else. They don't need my Barclays.
So, there's nothing in there for them to take anyway, have it.
Again, not sponsored, but got this thing. It's basically to do push-ups on, and it's got different colours, and the different colours basically correlate to what muscles you're working out.
Oh, that's quite good. Have you used it?
I do use it, although like my hands are a bit messed up at the moment, so... Which it sounds like that's a really big excuse, but it's actually not. My hands are really like, I don't know if you noticed on Saturday, Lima. They're just like, I've had like a bit of like dry, they were like a bit dry on certain fingers, and it's just kind of expanded. And it's like literally like I have like, it actually looks a lot better than it is normally, but like, it's not good. So I'm basically like trying to sort that out, which obviously affects being able to do that. But that is a good piece of equipment. But like, then that just came up loads, and then there's another one that started coming up now. I'm just like, I'm not gonna buy every single piece of exercise equipment that comes up on TikTok. Like, why does it think that I'm going to do that? Like,
well, now that you've bought one, it defo just thinks that like you're gonna buy all of it.
But like, it was so cheap. That's the thing as well.
Rubbish. It tells me. But like, I really hate how like the influencers are really trying. They're not even influencers. Like, the random people are really trying to flog it. Like, there's just, you scroll.
You know, they're getting like screaming in your face as well.
Yeah, but there's a girl just like screaming in your face, like, if you haven't tried this viral gym top, it's on offer, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. But also,
you lot are good, you know, you lot are getting like advertisements for gym equipment. I'm getting advertisements for lashes, makeup. Oh, no,
and I got loads for like noodles, as if I'm buying food off TikTok.
Oh, that's just noodles, scary. Yeah, noodles. I would buy them, not gonna lie. I'll put my hands up. I'm such a consumer's pig. Like, I'll just. It's too easy for me to just click pay.
To make this like an actual thing, like, I feel like stuff like greens and like fitness related stuff is weird to like scam people on, because it's like, for me, if you're telling me it's going to fix every problem that I've been struggling with for like 2 years, you're obviously targeting a certain group of people. And if you're just scamming them, like, it's just not fair.
Yeah, it's a difference between... Although some would argue that like hoarding and compulsive buying is an addiction, like for some people, it's still a sense of you're just putting something in front of someone, and if they want to buy it, they can buy it, as opposed to promising results for someone who's in a needy position. You know what I mean? God,
guys, are you proud of me? So I moved back from uni in 2022, and my underneath my bed, in my cupboard, and like there's a cupboard above my cupboard, have all been like stacked to the brim with like rubbish, absolute rubbish, mostly clothes, and I've not been able to find anything, and I'm just, everything's just all over the place, and it's just honestly such an embarrassing mess. I spent the whole weekend clearing it out, and I think I've genuinely cleared like 60-70% of all my clothes, and I've sent them all off to India so people can have them there.
You are just such a good girl. Teach me, because that's my number one problem, you know.
My mind just feels like emptier, like having space under my bed for the first time in like years. I literally found clothes that I used to wear when I was like 17, and I was like, first of all, would never wear this, second of all, like, just no, I just don't need it. It was just so much clutter and mental clutter that it feels so good.
I see this type of discussion a lot online, And it's a lot of people, like, there'll be a tweet or something that basically has a picture of, like, a very minimalistic setup. And then the quote is like, ugh, how can, like, someone want, like, this? It's so bare and everything. And then someone replied to it with very true saying, like it was, like, a picture of what, like, a classic house that maybe someone of our generation or the generation before, like, grew up with, like, millennial, and it's just clutter. Mm. And they're, like, millennials, like, etc., have literally grown up with, like, all this idea of clutter around them that they just want, like, just a bit of, like, and I know that as well. Like, sometimes downstairs at mine, like, it'll look a bit bare sometimes. I do think there's still stuff to be done, but I have to remind myself that actually sometimes less is more. 100%. And actually it's so much better, like, just not having as much stuff around.
I do think, like, if you can link it to, like, immigration and stuff as well, though, because I feel like if you kind of
come somewhere
and you have, like, scarcity mindset, you want to hoard and you want to hold on to your belongings because you don't know how long the next thing's going to last until it might break, so you need a backup, or, like, you want to just hold on to as many things as you possibly can for safety and resources. So I kind of get where it comes from. We have been afforded the privilege of being able to clear out and have spring cleans and stuff like that, so I feel like that's something I definitely did reflect on over the weekend, and that mental clearness now of having the space for not space for new things, but just space now, empty space, is just so nice.
I completely agree with, like, the immigrant thing, because I have this conversation so often with, like, my, like, ethnic friends, my, like, Asian friends, my African friends. I literally reposted a TikTok, like, 3 days ago, and it was trying to get an African, it's a woman making a skit about trying to get an African woman to clear out their household. And I, obviously I'm not African, but, like, I just relate to it so much. I had to, like, I do think, like, immigrant parents, especially when they have, as you said, that scarcity mindset, they tend to hoard because they're, like, afraid of having a lack of resources. Growing up, oh my god, like, and to be fair, I think my mom has passed a lot of it on to me in terms of, like, the hoarding stuff, but she's, like, kind of next level. I remember, like, a few years ago, there was a point where I had to order a skip behind my parents' back and just, like, go behind, literally go behind their back and go around the house and just chuck stuff onto the skip.
We've done that.
Yeah, I have an auntie in America who's, like, really, she's so funny. It's actually really comical. Like, anything that you need, she will have it. That woman, like, there's basically, like, no space in her house because she has found every single empty crevice and, like, stuffed things into it. She will pull out, like, anything that she finds in a sale. Anytime there's a sale on anything, she will buy it. She will pull out, like, a egg poacher, a waffle maker. We'll be in her house and she'll be giving us, like, tracksuit bottoms, socks with, like, Donald Trump's face on it, like, anything that she can find in a sale, she will buy and she will hoard. It's so funny.
It's like, just because it's, like, cheap, it's, it seems like a good thing to have, like, 20 of everything, but really
it's kind of like that. It's that mentality of, like, oh, we don't know when we're gonna need it. And like, my auntie does this thing where she buys it and then, like, every time she goes to Bangladesh in every however many years, she just takes it all to Bangladesh and just gives it to people there. It's so funny.
Well, on the topic of Asian history and ancestry, etc.
Nice.
Yeah.
Allow it.
What kind of segue?
I mean, I don't think any of us have actually seen it yet, but just wanted to briefly touch upon the new 3-part documentary that's going out on Channel 4. Halima, I know you brought it to the chat yesterday.
Yeah, so, like, basically, Riz Ahmed has, I love Riz Ahmed, but he has basically gone into, like, the Channel 4 archives or whatever, and they've basically made, as Carla said, a 3-part documentary about South Asians, like, first experience of, like, fascism in the 70s, 80s, 90s, I think. And the kind of resistance movements against fascism, which I love that they've done that, because I think that it's a topic that just is not explored at all, like, in the British kind of political landscape. Like, there's not very many conversations that are had about kind of the particular strain of, like, anti-Asian fascism and anti-Asian racism, particularly when we first had the waves of mass migration from the subcontinent throughout the 70s and 80s and 90s, because I grew up like hearing stories about my family members that were, so you know, the obviously the word, the P word, the reason why it is a racial slur is because it comes from practices of P word bashing, which is basically a phenomenon where far right kind of members of like, you know, the National Front and whatever, or just people that were racist, would literally go out in the streets and look for Asian people to beat up, and they would call that P word bashing. And it was a whole sustained movement over decades, you know, that's just one part of it. And we always kind of see either, like, we either hear or see nothing about it, or we see just one part of it where it was like it happened to them. We don't ever see, like, we don't ever see or hear about the resistance efforts, the resistance movements. And I think it's such an important and like empowering part of our history as like British South Asians. So I'm personally just like really glad that this documentary has been made.
Yeah, I mean, literally, it's like you say, it's all about the actual resistance. The title of the documentary is Defiance, yeah. Fighting the Far Right. So it's not just focusing on this idea of, oh, what were the National Front, etc., up to at that time. It's what was the British Asian experience, and what were they doing to actually combat that as well.
But I think that's really important, because I'm sure other people's experiences will differ from my understanding of it. But from what I've personally learned is that, like, the P word bashing and that kind of movement stopped as our society got more like progressive, and they got more like liberal, and they got more woke. Not any sign of a like of defiance from South Asians, that there wasn't any pushback. It's just that we fell victim to it, and then suddenly people just woke up and were like, oh, that's a bit wrong. Maybe as British people we're more mm-hmm. progressive and more better than mm-hmm. that, so let's just stop. Mm-hmm. No, there mm-hmm. was a whole defiance act against it.
Yeah. No, but this is the thing as well, like, a lot of people don't actually, like, a lot of people have a vague understanding of the practices of P word bashing, but they don't really know the kind of the instances that were happening and the events that took place. And I only know of that kind of history because I actively went out and like researched it for myself. You know, like, there were race riots all over the country, especially up north. Like, there's a really particular kind of a local history up in the north, in areas like Bradford and Oldham and Greater Manchester, where there were literal race riots, guys. Like, and my family were there, you know, like, my family, this was like when my dad had like first moved to the country. So I hear all the time from like my uncles and like my older cousins and stuff, the things that they were going through. Like, they would have to walk around with like bricks in their hands,
yeah,
because they would be attacked. Like, they would have dogs set on them.
Same.
They would be
here.
Like petrol. They would get like petrol bombed. As in, like, it's happened numerous times. People would post like petrol bombs through their letterboxes. Their properties would be vandalized all the time. They would not be allowed out after certain times because it was just so dangerous for them. But there was, I say, a resistance movement against that, and it, I think, was really formative in the kind of making of the South Asian diaspora communities, especially in kind of real stronghold areas that we see, like Bradford, like Oldham up north. So I think it's just really important to know.
It's really interesting as well, this idea of, because when you think about history, and especially like recent history, for example, I think it kind of speaks to the privilege that various communities that haven't been through migration or whatever have, in the sense that if you ask someone, like, say, for example, from a white British family, like, to speak, like, they could easily very much, like, speak upon what's happened over the past 50 years or something, or 100 years even, because they know that their ancestors were here and they've experienced that sort of thing. But I was just thinking now, like, hearing both of you speaking about that, and about how Halima, obviously, like, members of your, elder members of your family were there, Simran too, I believe. And I was just thinking about how, like, because obviously my dad didn't come here until 1992, and I just think about how I haven't actually heard him speak on this. And I realized he came here by himself, didn't really come into a community. And I just started thinking about, actually, there's going to be plenty of British Asians that are around now that have come up around since this happened. And whilst you'd expect them to maybe know and this be a part of their history, it actually isn't necessarily a shared history, because they're actually, like, they're the same, like, ethnic demographic, but they haven't got the same history.
It's a migration, you know what I mean? The migration historiography is different, for sure. But also, yeah. Like, it is obviously part of a wider tapestry of anti-South Asian, racism. Another thing as well that I think is really, another reason why I think it's really good that this documentary was made was because, like, I can sit here and kind of, like, reel off, like, kind of some basic events that my family have gone through and stuff like that. But I actually don't know the half of it. And it's like, immigrant dads do this thing, yeah, where they don't talk about their life at all. Like, all my first gen friends say this, like, they'll just be sitting one day and then their dad will just randomly tell them, like, the most traumatic story ever, as though, like, it's nothing. And it's like, it's a very similar thing with my dad. Like, I didn't hear about a lot of this from him. I heard about, like, through my cousins and things like that. And then, like, he will just randomly, like, for example, I don't know if the documentary covers this event, but one kind of, like, really, like, landscape-changing thing that happened in Manchester was the kind of racist murder of a 13-year-old Bengali schoolboy, Ahmed Iqbalullah, yeah. So in Central Library, the Race Relations Centre is actually named after him. And, like, I mentioned it to my dad one day, and he was like, oh, yeah, we were there, we were lobbying for the creation of this centre, like, we were there doing all the protests and everything. I was like, it's so intimately tied to even my own family history, my local history, the areas that I've grown up in, and I'm like, I had no idea.
No, but it's so true. And I don't know if it's like a male thing and not talking about like their emotions or what they went through, because obviously they probably don't want to admit, they're probably very traumatized by what they've seen. So it probably goes very deep into that. But I do I have experienced the law that gets dropped randomly on a Tuesday morning randomly. And I'm like, yeah, you know, like we were really involved in like 1984 attempted genocide in India. Your granddad's brother was front man for this whole political group and blah, blah, blah. I was like,
randomly
just dropping this like really important law, and I'm like, oh right, okay, thanks for letting me know. No one ever told me that. So much I've learned about my family since like my grandfather passed away, just in passing chats, like comments, and I have to be like, go back. It's like a whole bit of family history. But also, like, coming back to Carlos quickly, I think like as the P word bashing movement died out, the reason why more recent immigrants and their like children and stuff haven't heard of it or really understood it or understood the severity of it and how it died out, forget about the defiance against it, right, is because I think as it died out, it was very much shrouded in white saviorism, in that like kind of going back to what I said about the whole like we've progressed as a society, therefore we're better than p-word bashing, nothing to do with the fact that the South Asians were fighting back, but it just became superiority, like that mindset.
I think it's also just kind of like the nature and the culture of like racism changed as well, where back then maybe it was a little bit more over violent, flagrant, which I don't think we've actually come that far from, because there are still literal like racial hate crimes like very often. But I think it became where mass migration kind of engendered a new dawn of like multiculturalism in the country. I think the kind of nature of racism changed to become a little bit more institutionalized.
So I agree.
It's as I say, it's all still part of a wider tapestry of anti-South Asian racism that is still today texturizing and characterizing even our experiences as 100%. South Asian in this country.
But like I've even seen like from that time of like how people would organize, like they would literally schedule time in their day to get together as a group and go out and p-word bash. Like I've seen pictures of like sheets that were basically like put up in places to be like, everybody join in at this time, we're gonna go out on the streets and look for people and blah 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 blah.
Yeah, like, it's
that
actually
was
crazy.
How
yeah.
normalized it is, and that's how long-standing the history is in this country of seeing migrants and people that aren't the like typical conformity of what a British person looks like being seen as like a lower class subhuman and just like completely free game to racially abuse and attack.
I'm also like glad that the documentary has been made to show the British public. I hope some of them really watch it, about the truth about like racism and the kind of genealogy of racism in this country, because so many of them are just so in denial about the fact that it exists or that it ever existed. So like I think from even just the trailer, I've seen some like real kind of exposing clips of the public of like Margaret Thatcher talking about immigration. So I really hope that it's an eye-opener for the British public to understand actually this was in our parents' lifetime.
I
You
was
know,
going to
like
say,
it's not like a sorry, it's not like a faraway reality. Like my dad will sit down and tell you like story after story after story of their personal experiences.
that's what I mean. I feel like we can't forget how recent this was, even though it's kind of been like erased in that sense. And the silence of like the people that were active during that time because of different reasons, like emotional processing and just capacity to talk about these kinds of things and how things work in our culture, works to those people's favor in that they've been silenced in that sense. And I feel like it can't go without saying that, like, it was literally in our parents' lifetime, and the severity of it was crazy. And it's not gone away. Like you said, it's more institutionalized now. But even still, there are so many ways where you see it and it's overt, because I feel like it's very linked to like being patriotic and stuff. And you see it now, like, it kind of almost reminds me of like football hooliganism culture and how that's linked to like racism nowadays, and like the very overtness of like people's comments towards like racial demographics now. That kind of mirrored what was being said back then as well.
Yeah, it's definitely not, it's not a departure point the way that people make out. Like it's still very much here. It's just that there's like an added layer of complexity now where certain things are more institutionalized than they were before. But all those things from before also do exist.
I don't know if it's because obviously of like the age through which we've grown up and stuff, and whether there was a sense of naivety there, but and because obviously like 2016, the Brexit vote, that was the year, it was the second vote that I took part in, but I was obviously my late teens, early 20s, like that period. And I think a lot of people have noted that that was almost a turning point, and that things have started become a bit more overt since then in terms of xenophobia, racial discrimination, etc. So it does feel a bit like it's maybe done a bit of a dip in that sense, and that it maybe like it was like a bit more of a, oh, we've gone past that, we're better than that, or like it was still happening, but it was maybe a bit less overt, and now people are getting more and more emboldened to actually go out and do the same thing again. Again, I don't know if that's just from my perspective, because I was growing up then, and then whether it's just that I've clocked on to, oh, this is actually happening sort of thing, but that's the way that I see it kind of.
But I think when you've got like actual coloured politicians also implementing racist policies, allegedly, that doesn't help our case. If you do want to talk about
No,
emboldening people,
I think
okay.
it's just a very it's a very important documentary in the sense, but it talks a lot about, because the 70s was kind of like the advent of mass migration from the subcontinent. So I think it's a very important documentary to talk about kind of like the point of, not that it's the point of origin, but it's the point of origin of this particular strain of British anti-South Asian racism that we see in the kind of imperial heartland, you know, in the imperial core. Because before, I guess it was kind of like in the subcontinent, and now it's been exported back to the imperial core with the advent of mass migration.
Do you know what it made me realize? That, like, unless you're South Asian, you're not going to know about it because it's not taught in schools. They're not.
That's my point. That's exactly what I'm
And I
saying.
realized,
Not a
I was
known
trying to think,
history.
like, what was I taught in schools about the 70s as a decade? And it was just like Andy Warhol and pop art and like
Hippies.
hippies and like that culture and like how fun and lively and vibrant it was. And
I
actually,
remember literally in primary school doing a 70s or 60s week, and it was literally just all about like, oh, fun, the
Which I get,
Beatles.
like, okay, fine, maybe you're not gonna tell like
Yeah.
6-year-olds about something like this has happened, but unless you are South Asian with people that were directly involved in it, you're not gonna know that this ever
I was
happened.
gonna say it's not even like you're. It's not even if you're South Asian. It's if you're South Asian, and because of that, you take a personal interest and go do your research. Like
Crazy.
it is not a taught history at all, and it's insane because it has impacted what the political landscape is today, what the immigration laws that we have, the kind of citizenship laws that we have, all of that has been impacted by what was happening when they first came here.
But in my opinion, Britain just has this amazing way of just washing over the bits that they don't want to talk about and then just putting everything else on a pedestal. Winston Churchill. Like, everything else gets put on a pedestal, and like whatever, all the ugly bits, they just pretend like it never ever happened.
Yeah, yeah, they call it historical amnesia. Britain are very, very, very good at that.
But yeah, Defiance, Fighting the Far Right, Channel 4, definitely go and watch it.
Yeah.
Yes. Right, next point of conversation, Eurovision, which has been under a lot of strain due to controversy recently, because, again, Eurovision itself is just such a weird concept, isn't it? Like, it's just...
I don't understand it.
Have we discussed on the show before about how I never knew it was a thing until I went to uni, and then people, like, actually, like, really love it?
I mean, I didn't know that it was, like, a prop... I didn't know that it was, like, a wow thing until uni. But at the same time, I think I get it in the sense that I get why it's, like, a fun thing to just be involved in, because at the end of the day, most of it is just so ridiculous. Like, and the fact that a lot of countries don't want to put their good artists in it because they don't want to risk being embarrassed. So because of that, a lot of the time it's very weird.
Yeah,
and
I didn't know that either.
Because
it's embarrassing.
I don't know whether there's also a rule about whether you're not allowed to. But I don't know.
Like,
but
we wouldn't put like Adele in.
Yeah, because otherwise, why wouldn't we have done? You know what I mean?
No, but what's so embarrassing about being in Eurovision?
No, I don't think it's that. I think the artists themselves just don't want to go on that. It's a little bit below their thing.
Because
Eurovision. It's not like it's the Grammys. Like,
no, and it also it's completely, well, it's like split. So a bit of it is to do with like a jury kind of vote. And a bit of it is to do with the public vote. And because of... So it's kind of like they get the public votes and then they add it to the judges' votes as well. And it's all gathered up. But then because people hate the UK, unless...
Oh, I was going to say, like, Adele would be numbers.
Yeah, no. But that's the thing. Unless it's a particularly, like, good song. Like, for example, a couple of years ago, Sam Ryder, you know, the guy with the really long blonde hair, he did like that song Spaceman, like really hit well with people, and he ended up coming second. He would have come first if it wasn't for Ukraine obviously getting the sympathy vote. Like, I'm not even saying that, like, that is the reason why.
I know.
Is that actually why? That's actually like official.
Yeah, because it was 2022.
Yeah, when they did it in Liverpool.
No, there was the year. No, that's why. Because the reason why they did it in Liverpool was because whoever wins it hosts it next year. So Ukraine won it that year, but then obviously they couldn't host it, so it went to the second place, which was the UK. Hence why it was hosted in Liverpool.
That's so funny. But
this is why I mean, it's just such a weird thing. It's weird, and from like I say, from that perspective, I get it. I get why, like, people, like, especially, like, quirky people, and I think it's also quite big amongst, like, the queer community as well. Like, they just love it and just go for it. I'm just like,
The only one I like, whatever. Like, when I say it was Iceland, they did a good performance a few years ago. It was a song called Think About Things, and that still slaps to this day.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't know anything about...
That's the only thing
I
know.
I don't think it's kind of, like, the beacon of kind of, like, great vocal and musical talent and performance. I think it's just a bit of fun and games.
Exactly. However, I think that's why a lot of people get drawn to it.
However, obviously, nothing is kind of untarnished by politics.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, going back to the weirdness of Eurovision, you've got countries like Australia that are part of it. I don't know why.
So I understand because they were Commonwealth,
Australia is literally they got invited as a guest participant in 2015. I think they just stuck around.
I mean,
like, it's just like, it's so weird. What about Israel?
So are they the only two countries that are non-European?
I'm not sure. I'm sure there's probably another couple of ones that have sneaked in. But so it's, I think it's to do with also broadcasting. So the Israeli public service broadcaster has been a member of the EBU, so the European Broadcasting Union, since 1957, and therefore has participated in the song contest for the last 50 years. So it's to do with basically whether your country has European broadcasting, I think, and Israel does apparently, so yeah.
Anyway, right, well then they just changed the name then, because it's not European, is it?
Yeah.
But then again,
it's already a weird thing, but in, like we were just saying about how Ukraine got the sympathy vote in 2022, also since then, Russia has actually been banned from taking part in Eurovision. Yeah, basically, it's because of the invasion of Ukraine. Meanwhile, obviously, fast forward to this year, and in the past 6 months, Israel has committed what many international courts have recognized as a genocide upon the Palestinian people, and they're being allowed to participate. And not only are they being allowed to participate, but their song, which had its name changed, but is still the same song, was called October Rain, in reference to the events of October the 7th. Again, even if you were to make the argument of, they're just singing about, like, coming back stronger from the, abhorrent attack which took place on Israeli people, you're not meant to be political in Eurovision.
You know what it is? Like, you know what this is? This is the perfect anecdote of how Israel are allowed to behave, and this is what I say all the time on the show, with complete impunity. Like, it seems as though there is a separate, like, rule book for everyone in the world, and then a separate rule book for Israel. We see it all the time. Like, I know this is ridiculous to draw parallels between the rules of Eurovision and the rules of, like, war and international law, but, like, it's really true. Like, on the international kind of stage, in terms of, like, kind of the politics of war, we have seen time and time and time again how Israel have broken numerous, like, as in, like, we cannot count the number of international laws that they have broken, and yet they have not been met with any major kind of deterring sanction or consequence of that. And it's the same exact thing where Russia have faced repercussions for their invasion of Ukraine. The policy hasn't changed, the rule hasn't changed, the law hasn't changed, and yet Israel are allowed to somehow not be kind of subject to that. And it's a very similar thing that I'm seeing in terms of the double standards, even in terms of the reception to both invasions. When Russia invaded Ukraine, everybody was allowed to come out and politicize the whole event and take a political stance, which it is ultimately a political kind of, you know, it is a political thing that we shouldn't shy away from politicizing, but everyone was allowed to wear their Ukrainian badge. Everyone was allowed to put the Ukraine flag in their bios, and it didn't impact their work. It didn't impact anything. There was no consequence for standing with Ukraine. And yet when people have done it with Palestine, people have been met with so much, like, backlash and so much negative consequence that to the point where people are being silenced. So the double standard for me is, honestly, it's just very consistent with everything we've seen so far. It's ridiculous, but very consistent.
But I think it draws parallel even with, like, the, like, Palestinian influencers or celebrities, like, obviously posting about what had been going on, versus Israeli influencers and celebrities who were like, morning coffee, or, like, you know, that one girl who captioned her literal post war days, like,
and she's just chilling, and she's chilling.
Like, I've come across people from Israel since October, right? Like, in Germany, for some reason, there was quite a few people. In fact, my flight landed at the same time as a flight from Tel Aviv, so we were all our baggage together. And I was like, this is crazy, because, like, the
paradise. You lot are just on holiday.
Yeah, it's wild.
You lot are just on holiday, I know.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, in that sense, it's not that different to, like you've been saying, what we've been seeing over the past 6 months in regards to how anyone who, any layperson acts in regards to how Israel, as a state, is acting. But I think what, to close, like, one of the things I wanted to chat about was in regards to the actual participants of Eurovision and whether there is any point in A, boycotting the contest, and B, putting pressure on the acts themselves to boycott.
What?
So to give context, for people who don't watch Eurovision, each country nominates one artist to perform a song, and then that's what gets judged at the end. This year, the UK is sending Ollie Alexander, who is best known for being the lead singer from the band Years and Years. It's also a bit different as well, because like I said, normally they put forward slightly lesser known artists, I think, because again, like, either the artists don't want to take part or they don't want to risk like damaging their rep sort of thing. But
I was gonna say, he's quite well known, like, to be a
Yeah, he is. Point. Yeah, exactly. And I think also the fact that he's LGBTQ plus, like, as well, it's very much his avenue. You know what I mean? Like, it's very much like his fan base are very much like that kind of vibe. And honestly, when I saw that he was taking part, like, I think it was announced like around Christmas, I was like, oh yeah, this is really cool, like, happy for him sort of thing. Obviously, fast forward now, and Israel is still being allowed to take part in Eurovision in spite of everything. And again, even though they're not even part of the Europe, even though we've gone into why that they're still in it, but regardless. So he's obviously been, a lot of people put pressure on him to be like, why are you not, like, standing up against this? Why are you not doing blah, 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 etc.? So then, I think a couple of weeks ago, yeah, it was the end of March, first of all, he and a number of other artists, I think from Ireland, from Finland, a couple of them basically put out this joint statement, which again, in my opinion, was very much limited. To give you the vibe, it basically, like, to give you the idea of how, like, ridiculous it was, we firmly believe in the unifying power of music, enabling people to transcend differences and foster meaningful conversations and connections.
Oh my god, I don't even want to hear it.
That's it.
What stupid idiot. They don't have two brain cells to rub together. You're not gonna go stand on the border of Gaza and just be singing, thinking, me singing.
Kumbaya. Like,
not even in Gaza, you singing on a stage, and where is it held this year?
It'll be in Sweden.
Do you know what this is? This is Kylie Jenner's Pepsi Max advert. You don't think that Kendall Jenner's Pepsi Max advert or Pepsi advert, whatever. It's you lot thinking that you're going to stand on a stage all the way in Sweden, so far removed from the reality of Palestinians and Gazans, sing your silly little song, and somehow that's going to help people transcend a genocide? Yeah. A genocide? This isn't difference anymore. You know, it's not like, oh, we're transcending political differences. This is an actual genocide. Like, it's insane.
I love when celebrities think they've cooked.
You know what I mean? Like, they're just so out of touch with reality.
I know they thought that was heat and they were like, yeah.
It's so platitudinal. Like, all it is an excuse to do what they were going to do anyway.
Well, this is the thing. So then following that, that was like a joint statement with a number of artists. And then he put a separate one that, it didn't add anything to the conversation, basically. It was the same type
of
thing.
It's empty
like thoughts, thoughts and prayers kind of vibes.
Yeah. It's like, you might as well, you honestly might as well just not say anything. Like, if this is the vibe that you're coming with, don't insult the people who are calling for legitimate boycott by adding platitudes, empty platitudes. It's not even what you're saying is like completely meaningless. You're being insulting by saying, oh, the unifying power of music. Do you think you singing a stupid song on a stage in all the way in Sweden is going to help people overcome a genocide? Rub those two brain cells together. Have a coherent thought.
And I think a lot of people would then, like, respond back to you then by saying, well, how is them not performing a song helping people overcome a genocide?
It's to do with principle. That's what it is. Like, we have seen, like, we're 6 months into this right now, right? Like, these debates should have been parked a long time ago. We have seen already we spoke just last week about what the power of boycott does when we spoke about Home in Manchester when they'd gotten rid of the event. We spoke just last week about how artists collectively coming together to take a stance on principle, how that can lead to material impact and change. If Israel right now are committing a genocide, you might think that, oh, boycotting them from like, or not allowing them to take part in Eurovision is not going to do anything in the grand scheme of things. Maybe it might not stop them dropping bombs, but like it will isolate them. Do you know what I mean? Like as like as a country or whatever, like as a government, it will isolate them. The problem is that their actions have been completely normalized. People are just getting on with them, naturalizing relations with them as though nothing is happening. All you can do at the end of the day, okay, fine, fair enough, you can't like physically take up arms and like transport yourself to Gaza to free the people there. But like you can take a stance based on your own principles. And if you know by principle like they should not be allowed to be at that and take part in this competition based on what they've been doing, then stand by that.
This is the thing, I think, because there were nine artists in that joint statement. That's probably like at least a third of the artists that will be taking part in the competition. If those nine like step down, that would surely have an impact on the actual event. Like, rather than them just releasing a
They
statement
would then
saying,
say they the way that they but there's a precedent there, not just from years and years ago, pardon the pun, literally 2 years ago. There's a precedent from 2 years ago where they banned a country on the same exact ground. You've done it once, you can do it again. It's the same exact situation. If enough artists had said we are not performing if Israel are a contestant, they would ban Israel from the show. It's a stance that then an international kind of organization, it's yet another international organization that has stood against Israel. It might then probe a number of people to be like, oh, hang on, what's going on here then?
And I think the thing to finish on here, just again to add to the tone deafness of everyone involved, basically, I think there was some kind of pre-event earlier this week, which Ollie Alexander performed at, and his performance was very lackluster. You could see that he was clearly like not with it, not his normal cheery self. And a lot of people have kind of pointed to that and being like, oh, it's because he's receiving so much backlash over everything. People need to give him a break, which is arguments for and against. Because whilst I think again that he should take a stand, I do also understand that he's probably signed loads of contracts, and I don't think it will be easy for him to.
I think at the end of the day, it's all about your own personal principles. You have to go to bed with yourself. You have to go to bed with yourself. You have to answer, not maybe not to anyone, but to yourself. Do you know what I mean? Like you know in yourself what you did, what you didn't do, what you stood for, what you didn't stand for. That's it.
But then I think because that video is going viral now of him not being okay, Eurovision put out a statement today, and it is honestly just even more tone deaf than that statement. Just to read it out. The EBU recognizes the strong emotions stirred by this year's Eurovision Song Contest and the intense debate sparked by the inclusion of an Israeli entry. We would like to stress that any decisions regarding participation are the responsibility of the EBU's governing bodies, not the individual artists. We are firmly against any form of abuse or harassment directed at participants online or offline, and are committed to fostering a safe, respectful, and inclusive environment. We advocate for constructive dialogue and support for the artists, underlining the contest's mission to be united by music.
Did we advocate for constructive dialogue when the hospitals got raided?
This is like just so tone deaf, and I don't even want to like talk about it, to be honest. Yeah, because Halima's got to go anyway.
Bye,
Right, see
guys.
you, Halima.
Bye.
Yeah, Halima's dipping. But yeah, I don't think there's even any much more to say. It's just like, because I think within that statement, they're literally acknowledging that there is an issue with
Yeah.
Israel's entry.
But I just think like Eurovision is now a politicized platform, right? They've made it that. It's
Exactly. This is
just a
the thing.
thing.
They've made it that. Like,
Yeah.
if they didn't want to, then if they didn't want to do that, then they shouldn't have
Then fine. If
disqualified Russia, for
music was
example.
so
Like,
powerful and unifying, keep it just to that then. You know what I mean? Don't bring politics
yeah.
into this. It shouldn't have to be said that it's unifying and transcends differences and transcends borders and politics. Like, fine, leave it at that then. Let everyone sing their song, go home.
Yeah, you have to like, you have to be consistent.
But it just demonstrates time and time again, one rule for one country, another rule for another. Speaking of which is, I've been dying to ask this question while we've been talking about this. What has happened to the threats from Rishi Sunak regarding the three British aid workers that died the other day? Because it seems like he put his threat out and then just like said, that's enough.
Yeah.
Because no, genuinely, has there been an update? Because I don't think so.
Let's Google it.
As of today, April 9th, I've not seen anything. And it was supposed to be like the biggest stand our country's now taken against Israel, right?
I don't know about that, but one day ago, Mel Stride, who is, let's find out who they actually are. Mel Stride is the work and pension secretary. They're unsure as to why they're commenting on it anyway. They said that the UK has a duty to support Israel despite it killing British aid workers.
Oh my God, stick to your pensions. Stick to your pensions, babe.
Yeah. On that note, want to wrap a bit, Simran?
Yo, it's the Hypermancer. Guys, okay, let's put an open call out. Let's put an open call out because, guys, look at this. Yeah, I just want to put an open call out. Can someone think of a DJ name for me? Because at the moment, the front runners are DJ Bazzy Baz and Drum and Basra. So we need to get better than that.
Drum and Basra is really good, but obviously I don't think you would be doing drum and bass.
Drum and Basra ironically goes really hard. Unironically.
Unironically. But
I'm not a drum and bass. I don't really like drum and bass, I'll be honest. So yeah, DJ names, please. I really, like, you know how you have DJs that are like worried about Henry, Ross from Friends, Mall Grab? Like, how did they come up with that? But you know those names are only good when you blow. Like, they only stick once you're famous. Because if I came out now and I was like, I want to be Digestive Biscuits, everyone would be like, oh my God, just STFU. Like, just go back to your day job, babe. I actually don't know what I want out of it.
You don't have to have anything for me. You can it's be true, like a bedroom. Do you know what?
Hobbies exist. And I need to remind myself of that. Like, you don't have to master like everything that you get into. Like, hobbies exist. You're allowed to just do things for fun. However, 20%, I feel like hustle culture has poisoned my mind. Because it's like, what are you doing if you're not going to make money from it? Do you know what I mean? But that's just so stupid because hobbies and, you know, you're allowed to have fun in your life. But if you said that in a year from now, I could be like doing part life, for example, yeah? Like something big, or like even just like a big club in London, like Fabric or Phonox or something, right? If you said that, even if it was like not even that big of a set, like maybe I was supporting someone, 100% I would go and do that. Like, that is honestly so ideal, but it's the pathway to getting there that I'm not too passionate about, because I don't want to do like the free nights at like a dive bar or like a bar where no one's really listening to you and you just have to like do background ambience and stuff like that. Like, you know, when you're only paid on like exposure and stuff like that, like, just
But I think that's what separates the people that really wants it from the people that,
like me, yeah, bedroom DJ.
Yeah,
but I'm getting
still doing better than me. My thing's like back in the box. I haven't like touched it in like 6 months.
We need to go back to back, Carlos. So can you start practicing?
Well, on that note, thank you, Simran, for sticking through to the end. Unlike Halima,
I have to eat dinner now, and it's 7:45. Good news is it's still really light outside, and that makes me really happy in my soul. Also, guys, if anyone's listening and you've learned a language through Duolingo, please can you confirm if it actually helped you? Because I'm having second thoughts, and not going to lie, I did pay £60 for the Super Plus premium membership for the entire year. So I feel like I should at least ride it out for a year. But I just hit my 203-day streak, yeah? And I feel like I really don't have that much Spanish to show for it. And it's really annoying me because in my head, I fantasize about being in Spain and speaking to someone. And I feel like that's a good way for me to practice. But I don't have any Spanish people in my life to practice with. So either I just constantly book flights to Spain, anyway, can anyone that's learned a language of Duolingo please verify if it actually helps you? Because I watched TikTok about it and it hasn't left my brain, because really all I can say with certainty is Juan come manzanas, which means Juan eats apples, and that's not going to get me very far.
All I've got to say is I'm on 216 days. So
how have you got more than me?
What do you mean how?
Well, obviously you started 13 days before, but I didn't realize you were on more than me. I thought I was the highest out of everyone that I knew. It was like my biggest flex. So how's your Hindi? But at least you've got bare people to practice Hindi with.
You say that, but even going to India, it's like, it's just so hard to practice when you don't have someone who is able to give what you need, in the sense that I could never really practice when I'm actually in India, because everyone just speaks so quickly. Yeah. And I was just like, it's a lot easier for me to just dumb things down in English and like, yeah, rather than attempting to.
And like, their English is good as well. And also, like, if you say something and then they're like, what? Your confidence is going to get knocked so fast and you'll just resort to saying it in English. That's me in Spanish, 100%. Like, as soon as anyone, when I went to Barcelona, like, as soon as anyone would be like, sorry, I don't understand what you just said, I would just be like, oh, can I have the da-da-da? And I would just say it in English because it's just easier. I would just panic. Yeah, it's hard.
I want to know whose birthday it is this week. I missed that. Why did we stop doing that?
I don't know. You just stopped.
It's because one week you were like, I was like, oh, we forgot to do it. And you were like, no, it's fine. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, I can't be bothered anymore. If you had a birthday in late January or early February, you're welcome. Because Rick Astley, I feel like that was the last one. Maybe that's why we stopped. Because that was just, right, you know what? This call needs
to end. This whole last 5 minutes needs to stop. Guys, thank you so much for listening. We will catch you guys next week.
Bye.